Cape Talk, Car Talk.
With that, it's time to talk cars with our motoring journalist, Chira de Siena of cars.co.za, who's standing by to share some of the latest motoring news with us, to answer your questions as well on 021-446-0567. Just a reminder, please don't phone in with questions about how much you should be getting for your car or how much you should be paying. If you're looking for valuation advice for that, we would direct you either to cars.co.za to do a bit of comparison and homework, or go to book-value.co.za. Anything else to do with your motor is fair game, though. Chira, great to have you back on South African soil. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Pippa. It's good to be home.
For those who missed last week's segment, Chira's been in Japan, finding all about the latest electronic vehicle. Chira, I know we spoke last week about it. Anything you want to add that you experienced in the latter part of your trip?
From a touristic point of view, I suppose Tokyo absolutely blew my mind. I'm not sure how else to describe it, but I would say that if any of the listeners ever have a chance to get to Tokyo, it's just one of the most extraordinary places I've ever visited. And in terms of electric cars, something I noticed there, you know, a lot of people say that Japan is always a few years ahead of the rest of the world. Virtually every car on the road in Japan is either hybrid, already hybrid, or electric, or moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. And quite interestingly, in the city of Yokohama, they're particularly worried about global warming. They reckon the typhoons and the flooding has gotten worse over the years. So they've put in a system in place where if you build a new building, it has to have a certain amount of electric vehicle charging points.
Fantastic.
And you have to offer a certain amount of electric vehicles as pool cars to your employees, and they can hire them by the hour. So this is obviously great for companies like Nissan, because they barely have to market these cars anymore.
Yeah.
So it's legislation that you have to put them into circulation. So, I mean, really moving ahead, and it speaks to the fact that legislation is going to have to keep up with the technology so that the technology can be as effective used to maximum effect.
Really interesting observations, Chira. Thanks very much for sharing them with us. We're going to have a little bit of a chat about driving slowly in the fast lane as well. But first, before we do that, I want to say hello to Ross, because he was very quick to call us with a question. Ross in Thornton, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a little bit of a strange one. I've got a Honda Taz, and I really, really like the car. It's really great. It's about 8 years old. But I do have a problem, especially when it comes up to summer, and obviously the sun's very bright. I have great difficulty in reading the instrument panel. And I'm not sure if an owner before me had tried to polish the plastic, because I think it's plastic. I just wonder if this is something which is widespread, because it really makes it quite difficult to read. Especially the speedometer and the amount of fuel I've got left. So I do find it quite difficult.
That's an interesting one. Chira, what advice for us?
Potentially, what could have happened is the plastic which covers your instruments, after long time exposure to the sun, the plastic could have developed a bit of a haze. It happens a lot with headlights. And we've actually spoken about this on the show before, I think a couple of years ago, where we asked listeners to phone in with their advice for how to clear their headlights. And if I'm not mistaken, one of the solutions was toothpaste, actually. But
okay.
obviously, maybe you want something a little bit more scientific. So you could pop along to a Midas, for instance. They will have a product which will clear that plastic. And it might be a little tricky, because it will require you to get that piece of plastic out of the dashboard and then treat it. And if you're not so comfortable in doing that, then perhaps it's worth approaching a mechanic or a body fitment center or one of these dent repair shops like Dent Magic, for instance, and just ask them to do it for you. I'm just assuming that is the case, obviously without having seen your vehicle. Alternatively, you could essentially just source that part from Honda and just replace it outright and, you know, just skip past the treatment phase.
Yeah, thanks. I have a feeling, a terrible feeling, though, if I source it from Honda, it's going to cost me half the price of the car.
You never know. The people at Honda Cape Town are actually, they're very, very friendly guys. I know the one salesman fairly well. And if you want, I can put you in touch with him, and maybe he'll be able to help you out.
That's very kind of you, Chira. Ross, if you'd like to take Chira up on that offer, just drop me an email to pippah@capetalk.co.za and I'll put you in touch. Chira, thanks for the advice there. Now, driving in the fast lane. Chira, the reason I brought this up is last week we had a conversation around road rage following how many, any number of incidents being reported. And the road rage issue aside, and of course we can all agree there's no excuse for resorting to violence. But what one very common theme that kept emerging was how aggravated people get when someone is hogging the fast lane. They're sitting in the right-hand lane driving at 80 kilometers an hour and refusing to move over. Clearly it's something that not only pushes buttons but is resulting in some of these road rage incidents. And I thought it was worth just having a quick conversation about it today, because it's more than just an aggravation. It's a danger on the road, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And aggravation causes danger. And I think the very first issue, maybe just to go back a step, is that South Africans have a very bad habit of calling the fast lane the fast lane. It's actually the overtaking lane. Mm-hmm. And by rights, what we should be doing as drivers is we should be driving, for instance, on a three-lane highway in the left and the center lane. And then if we need to pass, then we pull into the overtaking lane, execute the overtaking maneuver, and then move back into the center or into the left lane. Of course, that isn't the reality on the ground whatsoever, especially in Johannesburg, where the fast lane is very much the fast lane. And if you are doing anywhere below the speed limit of 120, you are potentially getting in the way. And I would say that my advice is to not act the policeman, in other words. If you're doing 120, and yes, you are doing the speed limit, and someone comes up behind you and they're sitting on your bumper, flashing their lights, trying to get past you, the best thing to do is just get out of the way. Just let that person carry on with their day and go and sort of create problems elsewhere. We drive quite aggressively in this country, and the real problem is that what happens when somebody's moving slowly in the slow lane, in the fast lane, which legally you're allowed to do, a minimum of 80 k's an hour. But if you are in the fast lane and you're going very slowly, what happens is people then start overtaking you on the left hand side. And I suppose undertaking, maybe we could call it.
Yeah.
And the issue that creates a lot of danger, first of all, the main problem that arises from that is that slower moving traffic is moving from an on-ramp, for instance, or from the slower lane into the middle lane, and that's where you have accidents happening. You've got this car roaring past in the middle lane, a slower traffic moving into the middle lane, and you've got a massive speed differential there, and that creates issues. So the best thing to do, the only way to really, really stop that is to have everyone treating the fast lane like an overtaking lane so that those situations don't arise in the first place.
I do recall once upon a time a traffic official pointing out that the person who thinks they're doing the right thing, who's playing the cop, as it were, sitting at 120 and thinking, well, the person behind me who wants to overtake me is speeding and that is against the law. That person, in fact, is also on the foul side of the traffic laws, because the laws state that that lane is meant to be for overtaking and you should be giving way to faster traffic.
Yeah, that's actually a good way of looking at it. I think that in that case, both drivers are in the wrong. And again, if the lane is treated as an overtaking lane, then both those situations don't arise in the first place.
Okay, thanks for that little bit of insight there, Chira. And keep the calls coming now. Any motoring questions on 021-446-0567. I just have to divert and share this message with you. If you listen to the first hour, the consumer talk, Zygmunt called us from Takai, who'd had an issue with Pick and Pay. And he's just sent me an SMS to say, the power of Cape Talk. Pick and Pay's head office has just phoned me to apologize for the lack of feedback, and they have promised to sort it out. So Zygmunt saying thank you to Cape Talk and thank you to Wendy Nola for assisting in that way. That's fantastic that it got such instant feedback, Zygmunt, and we appreciate you letting us know. Back to the cars, and an interesting one here from Rod, as he describes it, the eternal question, which is best, buying a brand new car or a one-year-old?
Personally, I would lean towards buying a demo or a one-year-old car. I think what happens a lot in this country, and it's something that I haven't really looked too deep into the data to back up, but I think that credit is given quite easily in the country. Cars are financed perhaps to people who can't really afford them. And after a year of making those payments, perhaps the owner decides, right, this isn't worth it, and puts the car on the market or takes it to trade in for something a bit cheaper. So there are cars out there which are just a year old, which have low mileage. And I think they make for very good purchases. You know, someone has already taken the knock. You know, as soon as you drive a new car off the showroom floor, you're looking at a 5, 10, 15% drop in the price. So let someone else take the knock and pick up the second hand or the demo car. That's pretty much the route I would go every time.
Okay, thank you for the advice and good luck on the purchase if you're making one, Rods. We've got a question that's come in by voice note. Let's take a listen.
Papa and Chiro, I'm almost 100% sure that the cluster for the Honda Taz is a solid dash cluster, and one won't be able to remove the plastic casing. You'll have to polish it from the inside, or either replace the whole dash cluster, and that could be very expensive.
Okay, thanks for that feedback. Chiro, Honda Taz doesn't exist. I'm assuming it was either a Honda Jazz or a Toyota Taz, and I wasn't quite sure which we were having the conversation around.
Yeah, I did, when the initial caller called in, I did assume that he meant Honda Jazz, because the Toyota Taz is very old now, and perhaps, he just made a small error there. I'm not sure.
Sorry about that. So carry on.
No problem. I mean, I haven't seen the inside of an 8-year-old Honda Jazz, unfortunately, so a bit difficult to comment. But I do suspect that the dashboards are usually modular, and you usually be able to take a couple of the bits and pieces off and take it apart. It's just obviously that kind of skill and knowledge is not exactly very common. So it might be a little bit difficult to try and find someone who'd be willing to do that in the first place. But usually, a salesman at Midas, perhaps a shop like that would have a bit of advice, perhaps.
Okay. Interestingly, Mike's just sent us a WhatsApp saying that the VW Polo suffers from the same problem because you cannot see any of the needles. Mike, I hope that you'll take that advice Chiro has just shared with us as well. Thanks for your call. We can squeeze in one or two more questions on 021-446-0567. You can also tweet us at Cape Talk or send an email, as James has just done, asking, are they releasing the Mercedes Bucky AMG model in South Africa?
Ah, that's a big question in motoring circles at the moment.
Okay.
Mercedes haven't confirmed or denied that they'll be making a AMG version of their X-Class Bucky. In my crystal ball, if I had to gaze into it, I would say they won't. But then again, I also said I don't think they'd make a Bucky, so I was wrong about that. I think if an AMG model, however, does come about internationally, we'll almost certainly get it in South Africa. Because AMG, South Africa is a massive market for AMG, an overseas market for German AMG products. So we will almost certainly receive it on our roads if it is created.
Okay, thanks for that. Then Anonymous wanting to know your thoughts on the Hyundai Grand i10 1.2. Is it worth buying? I need a small car with very good fuel consumption is the question.
It will be quite light on fuel. There's no doubt about it. Small car, small engine. I'm trying to think if there might be something else which could potentially be even lighter. What tends to happen occasionally with these small cars is they tend to carry slightly older engines. And usually the older the engine, sort of a rule of thumb is the less efficient it is. Technology progresses very quickly and the newer engines tend to be more fuel efficient. Off the top of my head, perhaps a car like a Fiat 500, might be more fuel efficient. They actually have two cylinder engines, which are really impressive little units. And the VW Up, I know it for a fact, is an extremely efficient car. And I think I'd prefer personally rather live with an Up than a Hyundai Grand i10. And no offense, of course, to any i10 owners out there.
Fair enough.
That would just be my personal opinion. And I know for a fact it's extremely efficient little car, that Up. So maybe something to consider there.
Thanks for that. We've got another question that's come in on voice note. Let's take a listen.
Hi, Papa and Chiro. Can't agree more with Chiro. I bought a demo Toyota Corolla 1.4 Advanced in 2008. I'm driving it now as I'm listening to you. Not one problem. So I'd rather go for the demo.
That's been my experience as well. My Honda Jazz was a demo model, and touch wood, and I'll have to find some wood in the studio in a hurry. I feel the same way. So thanks for that voice note. Let's have a quick look at some of the newer releases, Chiro, and the new reviews. I know you've been out of the country, but one or two of your colleagues have been writing some interesting stuff. One of your colleagues got a look at the new Fiat Panda a week or so ago. Have you had a chance to find out more about that car?
Yes. I think the Fiat Panda, if I'm not mistaken, is now the most affordable 4x4 on the market.
Okay.
You know, so if you have your heart set on a Land Rover Discovery, for instance, but you only have 250,000 rand to spend, well, then the Panda actually is a fairly capable little thing. It's got raised ground clearance, a decent little 4x4 system. And I know that on the launch, the car was really put through its paces because a journalist actually rolled one on the 4x4 course.
Gosh.
And everyone got out unscathed. So it seems to be quite a safe little car as well. The Fiat Panda also sells extremely, extremely well in Europe. If I'm not mistaken, is the best-selling car in Italy, although maybe that's not too surprising. But it does sell very well in Europe. It's a well-loved car, and I think that if Fiat, there's a little bit of uncertainty at the moment, if I'm not mistaken, around Fiat globally. They're sort of perhaps splitting from Chrysler, for instance, and perhaps splitting from Jeep. I'm not sure what impact that'll have on the local market. But possibly the only problem with the Panda right now might be the dealer network to back it up. But again, it's all unconfirmed at this stage, and there's a little bit of things swirling around on the global market.
Okay, thanks for that. Interesting comment here from Lloyd on the SMS line, who said, I managed to replace the cluster of my Conquest. I got it at Toyota Spares Scrapyard in Kales River, and it was under 500 rand. So Lloyd did the homework, found somewhere that was supplying the spare parts and got it at a good price. I hope that the same will apply to the other two people who messaged on that issue of not being able to see their dials anymore. And then a comment from someone on driving in the overtaking lane. Let me not be part of the problem. Saying it's all very well moving over to the left lane, but the major problem is drivers that speed up behind you with zero following distance and expect you to move over immediately, regardless of the fact that there are, in fact, cars in the left-hand lane. Sometimes it takes a few seconds until there is a safe space. Tailgating is supremely dangerous, and this should be policed much more stringently. I can't disagree with anything that person said in the SMS line.
Yeah, it's something that we all experience on a daily basis. I mean, I was heading home yesterday on Table Bay Boulevard, and someone was sitting at about 60 in the fast lane, and I was behind them, just giving them some space, hoping that they see me and move over. But the problem is that every car that came up behind me overtook both of us on the left hand side. So the person who was trying to get out of my way couldn't, and that again is part of the problem.
Well, Chira, at the very least, you've made me correct my terminology, and I will try to apply the correct term going forward. Thanks, as always, for being with us.
No, thank you. Always fun. Thanks, Baba.
Chira de Siena of cars.co.za.